Hello, I'm Somi Aryan. I'm the founder of the think tank for women in business and technology and the FemPeak platform with the mission of raising women's socioeconomic status. These days, wherever we look, diversity is the name of the game. From corporations to social media, people are talking about it. When it comes to the discussion of women in business and technology, promoting diversity is a central part of tackling the lack of female representation. And who better to discuss this than our today's guest, Rita Kakati Shah. She's an award-winning gender diversity, inclusion, and career strategist, speaker and advisor to Fortune 500 companies. She's also the founder and CEO of UMA, an international platform that partners with organizations to attract, retain, and develop women and minorities in the workforce. Rita was also a panelist on our second conference for the Think Tank for Women in Business and Technology, where she discussed how increasing women's influence would benefit the global economy. In this podcast, Rita and I picked up where we had left off at the conference. A few days ago, I was reading about the jobs that are going to be like the hottest jobs in 2020s. The top one was like chief diversity officer. And it reminded me of you. And I was like, you know, I should talk to Rita about this. Now, one of the things that really stands out for me is that, like, I felt like 4-5 years ago, you know, Brexit and Trump, you know, and all of those things. So we're pushing the conversation in a way that I felt like people didn't like diversity. And all of a sudden, it's gone from that end of the spectrum to this end of the spectrum, where chief diversity officer is apparently going to be the hottest job of 2021. So what do you think about that?
You know, the irony of it all. I think at the end of the day, if you brush aside political, any political affiliations, like viewpoints on what goes on, at the end of the day, I think diversity has always been misunderstood. It's always been around. It's always been a part of our lives. But how we define it, how we think about it has changed and evolved over the times. Ultimately, diversity is just your differences. The fact that people have come from different backgrounds, from different viewpoints and that. And I think that's what it's about. It's obviously really kicked off this year. I mean, our phones have gone off the hook. I can't tell you, Somi, how busy it's got. Really, since the incident earlier in the year of a young black man that was unfortunately killed by a police officer in the US. And that really set off the tide, I think, in a lot of diversity conversations. Obviously, that had a very different persona to it, a different background, a different, okay, what is the root cause? How do you fix it? But it led people to believe that, oh my goodness, for the first time, people are feeling that this affects them. Doesn't matter which color, which creed, what your background is, what industry from, which country you originate from, where you were born. This is something that affected everybody. And I think in the global world, I think in the COVID world, Somi, where everything is remote right now, people are seeing different cultures. People have been affected by what people are saying, and people are now able to voice that opinion. In the old day, and you can probably attest to this, like, when the workforce was first getting started up, and you know, women was diversity back then. When I started in banking, I was diversity, just being a woman and then one a woman of color. Now diversity is so much more. Also being associated with just being able to say something that you feel. Before, we had professional life and personal life, very separate. The last thing you would ever do is talk about anything to do with what happens at home, at work. It just wasn't done. Now home and work are entwined, for starters. But also, it's very much people feel able to speak out. Now the narrative out there around the world is you see something, you say something in order to change something. And that is really what has overtaken diversity in the way we think about it today.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I started, when I came to the UK between 2005, I went straight to Scotland and I was studying there. It wasn't a particularly diverse area, but people were so nice. And I never, ever felt anything around, like I never felt discriminated against. But it wasn't until I went into the workforce that I started to really see that. You know, I came to London and I worked initially for a Middle Eastern TV channel for 5 years. And I thought, okay, now I want to go into the British channels because I want to be able to explore what else is out there. You know, I didn't want to be kind of stuck in that kind of pigeonhole, essentially. And that was when I really found it so difficult. I couldn't get in. I couldn't get a job, despite having 5 years of experience as a producer director, as a senior producer director. Mm. You know, I was like, people were telling me, you can go and start from, like, you can go and become a runner. And I was like, wow. What are you talking about? You know how many skills I have? That was when I was like, you know what? So now I'm going to go in and start my own business. If you're not going to let me into your crowd, I'm going to make my own one. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not letting me into your circle, I make my own circle. Yeah. And that's what it comes to in eventually. And this is not good because we're being pushed into this whole us and them kind of mentality. You know, I didn't want that. You know, I just wanted to be able to be part of that society, but I wasn't feeling welcome. Do you think that this craze for diversity right now, do you feel that it's the real deal? Or do you feel that it's like just a tick box, box exercise?
You know what? It's a really good question. Honestly, it's a bit of both. So diversity, yes. Exactly as you described it, it's about people coming out and how you identify, how do you feel that sense of belonging? So there are some companies out there that, yes, they genuinely want to do right by others. So I think of diversity in three ways, actually. So one is acknowledging that people have differences and acknowledging those exist. Then, okay, in terms of diversity, how do we now live with those and bring them to the table? And then ultimately decency, how can you actually have that desire and want to do right by others? And these are really important skills that I love to call the decency part, the decency quotient, a measurement actually of leadership and how that actually stands you forth in going forward. Whereas in the old days, it was just your IQ, how clever you are on a sheet of paper, or your EQ, how emotional, how empathetic you are, a combination of those. Plus some is what the decency quotient is about in reality. So what I think is it's very much of companies trying to come to terms with understanding what is the root cause of it. What is it that let people stay in a company? What is it that want them to leave? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that is what they've got to acknowledge. Unfortunately, though, it is a bit of a tick box exercise, specifically when the incident we spoke about did happen. Companies were rushing to be compliant, and how they defined that was different as well. Some of them were like, oh, we don't have enough, you know, women or people of color or from different sort of identifications on their board. And that was a big push. Others are like, we have to hire people from African American backgrounds or people from Black backgrounds of Latin American or Hispanic, whatever it was. And that's how they're trying to improve. And it's a lot of it is trying to fulfill a quota. Now, while that may help in a certain way to bring different talent to the pool, what you don't want to be, and I hamper about this all the time, Somi, and I'm sure you felt this as well, is that I don't want to be in a workplace where I'm ever thought of being there because I'm a woman or a woman of color. Ultimately, yes. It's hard work, it's resilience, it's grit that's going to get me recognized and promoted later on. Although companies are now doing a big push in terms of getting more diverse talent, the inclusivity piece shouldn't be about alienating or trying to pinpoint people just because they are from a certain background. It should be about bringing people together, not segregating, but togetherness. And that's a big piece that is still missing currently.
Definitely. I 100% second that. The thing is, what I see is, yes, it's a good start to think about, okay, we need to take that box. But the issue is, you're not really addressing the problem at the heart of it. Sometimes it feels that maybe some people are not interested in addressing the problem at the heart of it. Why? Because it's difficult. Because the truth is, when you bring in people of diverse backgrounds, they have their own problems. They have their own challenges. Like, for example, I'm an immigrant. So I came to the UK in 2005. I came here as a student. I paid for my own education. It took me 11 years to become a British citizen. And I always say, like, my life didn't even start until then. Yet, because of political reasons, because of the TV company that I worked in, and I was in a death metal band, all that stuff, you know, I can't go back. I haven't seen my family for 15 years. I have no other family in the UK. So I feel like every year around the Persian New Year, I go into a bit of a depression in a way, you know, because I'm like, you know, there are things that I always explain this kind of transitional lifestyle, you know, that people, immigrants that live in. It's so hard to understand unless you've been through it. And, you know, people are like, oh, why didn't you stay in your own country? Yeah. I was like,
because it was shit, you know, because like, it was like, right. It was a terrible situation. Like, you know, I'm much, much happier where I am now because I can make a lot of tries. I can, there are things I can do that I couldn't do before. And I think that as a human being in the West has allowed me to be much more productive and much more useful to humanity. There were many things I couldn't do, you know, because like I could just be in jail. Like I can go back now and be in jail, right? Because I don't buy into the regime style of governance. And so people who leave their countries, you know, they come to the West, they have a different perspective, a different, you know, knowledge, experience, that then if you allow that to flourish in the workplace and you allow that to amalgamate and kind of like really integrate with what you already have, then that leads to something new. It's like, like almost magical, you know, it could lead to, you know, generating new business ideas, new things that could really, because, you know, you think about, for example, in Persian, we write from right to left. In English, we write from left to right. This is two different ways of thinking. And I think it's to your advantage if you have somebody who writes from up to down or right to left. You know, like it's a different way of thinking, right? So it's to your advantage. What we really need to do in this conversation about diversity, rather than it being a tick box exercise where we say, okay, like we have enough black people on this panel, so yeah, I'm okay with that. Or like now we have one person who is like non-binary, so that's sorted. Rather than thinking of it like that, thinking about it, how can we use diversity to our advantage? And that's the part of where the issue is. And I don't know how you would communicate that. So tell me a little bit about how you communicate that with companies.
Yeah, I mean, everything you've said literally just hits the nail on the head and actually resonates with me personally as well. And I'll just give you an example of that, Somi. So I was born and brought up in the UK, my family from Assam, which is in the northeast of India. So even growing up in the UK, initially when I was younger, we grew up in a very white neighborhood. So we were the only non-white color family around. So that was interesting for folks. And that led to some interesting experiences for my younger brother and I growing up. Then fast forward a few years when we got to university, again in London, cosmopolitan city, went to King's College. So that was very, very diverse as it is. But then there were other people from different Indian backgrounds. Now, a lot of people think if you come from an Indian background, race is a monolithic thing. It is not. So for example, when I was younger, my parents signed me up for classical Indian dance classes from the south of India. I absolutely loved it. But then all of a sudden, during the week, I was the darkest person in the room. At the weekend, I was now the fairest person in the room because this is a South Indian dance form. Mm. So there, nobody would talk to me. I was not invited to birthday parties. People wouldn't talk to me. So I felt race on both sides. So when people say, oh, it's at the moment, the narrative is very much like white privilege, white is bad. I'm saying people aren't understanding the root cause of it. When you are in the minority, when you are the lesser of a crowd, and the other is in the majority, they are the privileged party by default of them being in the majority. And that is what people are failing sometimes to see. So in terms of the communication part, then the other thing, when I moved to the US, coming here for the first time, I remember getting out, you know, coming from the airport, came on my green card, so it was my one-way ticket after I got married, and getting out of the taxi, and the guy just said something under his breath, but I heard him. He said something like, learn to speak English. And I'm thinking in my head, well, I am English, number one, but wow, like so much for welcome to the country. And then it was things like that that sort of hits you with that sense of belonging. When you feel you do not belong, you kind of almost regress a little bit. You curl up into your own internal little ball. It eats up on your confidence. And that is what people forget as well. So similar to your points on me, whenever I would just go to work, I was just buried in my work. And that was my sort of familiarity, I guess. But whenever on the streets or on TV or whatever, I would hear even a tiny glimpse of an English accent, suddenly I would resonate and I would just strike up conversations with just random strangers that I never met before. I wouldn't do that in the UK, but I did it here because that was my comfort zone. That was my cultural warm blanket, thinking, wow, that is familiarity to me. Similarly to when you mentioned the new year, celebrating Persian holidays, it's the same kind of thing. How can you feel that sense of belonging? So yes, while companies are trying to do things about checking boxes, hiring diverse talent, having managers go through sort of mechanical training, how does that translate to really having that deep sense of understanding? can you really, how are you as a person that really wants to do right by others? How can you extend that sense of belonging? And I'll give another example on this exact same point. A year or so ago, I was in Moscow, just giving a talk at a diversity and inclusion conference. There was a room full, I would say about 3,000 people in the room. It was huge. These were like senior leaders of Eastern European sort of multinational companies. So they were all in the room and I was just talking about diversity and inclusion. And everybody was like, yes, we're diverse. India and Russia actually have a very good relationship. So for them, they were like, yes, it was nice for the bond that we had as well. But I asked them one little question. I said that how many of you have heard of Diwali, the Indian holiday? Quite a lot of hands went up in the room. I thought, yes, great. And they were like, yes. And I got people to volunteer what they meant by that. And I said, yeah, we have people from India come to work in our companies quite a lot. We love Indians. We love the company. Yes, we've heard of Diwali. Then I asked, how many of you celebrate Diwali at your companies? I would say in a sea full of room, I think maybe I saw one, maybe two hands saw me. And I said, that's the difference between being diverse, which they clearly were trying to do, and inclusion and getting people to feel that sense of belonging. If you're trying to bring people from different parts of the world and then mold them into what you are, that is not the same as allowing them to grow and breathe and influence by their different experiences. And that is what's not happening currently and what needs to change. So the communication part is really on really having that deep sense of understanding that want, that actually welcoming people to share their knowledge base with others.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, so this is actually precisely on the panel in the conference that you were on, Rita, there was a lady who sent me a message and said, when we sent out the lineup, she sent me a message and said, there's not enough diversity on your panel. And for that reason, I'm not going to be on it. And she said that it's like mostly women from Northern European culture. And I was like, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, do you realize I'm from Middle East? I'm running this whole conference, this whole movement. I'm from Middle East. I was born and brought up in Iran. I came to the UK in 2005. Yeah. Okay, I apologize. The color of my skin is, pale. Yeah. Don't judge people. Like, it's not acceptable to just look at something and say, you know what? This is the kind of mentality that's basically encouraging that tick box exercise, right? So because if you're a Black woman, you're looking at that and you're telling me, not acceptable, there are not enough Black people. Well, first of all, there is one Black person, there is like Indian, there's Iranian, there's Chinese, like we've got a variety of people. And secondly, this is really about women. It doesn't really matter where you come from. The other thing is, I don't work for a big organization. This is all self-funded. I don't have a massive team here sitting saying, okay, let's make sure we tick that box. No, I don't have a corporation behind me giving me a little bit of understanding and saying, you know what, Somi, you're really trying hard here. What can I do to help? Right? Mm. I see that, Somi, you don't have enough Black women. Can I introduce a few? Rather than saying, oh, you don't have enough Black women, I'm not coming to the conference.
Yeah.
That's not helpful.
So here's the thing, Somi, and being somebody who started a small business myself, I 110%, if not more, hear you there. You know, same thing, self-funded, building up something because you have a vision and ultimately to empower and help others and you want to grow that vision. And there's always going to be somebody out there that unfortunately, for whatever reason, feels somewhat differently or they will voice that opinion. So here's one thing about diversity in general. Diversity is your perception and it affects the community you are in. So for example, and I don't know the background of the person you're talking about, but it really depends on where it is. And I say this to multinationals all the time. When they are trying to do a talk or training for diversity and inclusion, I make well sure that it's different for every single office they're doing it at, even if the office is in the same country. Because it has to reflect the community they are servicing, the community they are in, and their client base. And that could be different in different parts. And that is ultimately what the thing is. Now, when you are running a global conference like you are, Somi, you have to also bear that in mind. You cannot, I mean, unless one day it's really huge and whatnot, and we have the capacity, you can't really realistically represent every single person from every single state in the world. You just can't do that. And even if you were to have more Black people on, how do you know they're going to even have that full diversity of backgrounds that somebody else is looking for? You want diversity of experiences, diversity of culture, diversity of thought that comes about. Color can often be a barrier to that. And when you say we only want people of a certain race to come in, you're actually doing the reverse. So it's completely to your point. It's not a box checking exercise, because if it was, that wouldn't do justice to your mission, Somi, and the mission that I'm doing. It just wouldn't work. You actually are being diverse by not doing that, and by actually getting the views of people from all different parts of the world, because that's what you're doing. Because and you can't always do that sometimes. My case in point, you know, similar to you say, the Persian New Year is in a spring. I celebrate the Assamese New Year. That's Bihu. That is in spring as well. You know, my family, we don't celebrate Diwali. I was grown up to celebrate it because I wouldn't fit in with my Indian friends if I didn't. But we celebrate Bihu. That's our New Year. So when people talk about Happy New Year, Indian friends at Diwali, I would just say, oh, I hope it's a lovely holiday for you. And I'd say Happy New Year back. But I said, oh, my New Year's actually different. So they know, because you don't make the one assumption for everybody. Same sort of thing. Only because you have one person from a certain community doesn't mean they represent any of the views and voices of everybody else. So I think you should just be so proud of what you're doing, and almost sort of in one ear out the other, take on board feedback. But again, they should have said it in a different way, and it should have come across differently as well.
Yeah, I really hope that people listening to this will take this into consideration and think about, you know, if we want true diversity, we need to be able to have a constructive conversation. I just think, you know, you need to be true to yourself, and I'm being true to myself. And I know that I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But at the same time, look, what comes out of here is like, you know, it's genuine. It's like, it's coming from the bottom of my heart. I do want to build an empire, not because I want to build an empire because I need to be in a private jet. And no, because I could be in a private jet and on my little laptop, you know, doing my own thing. Like, I don't care about any of those things. I want to change the narrative. What is the narrative? The world is run by 10 corporations, 5 in the US and 5 in China. And all of them are headed by men. And that's the narrative I want to change. Technology is moving the direction of humanity. And women are primarily absent in that. And that is my pain. I want to change that. One of my favorite podcasts is, I don't know if you know Lex Fridman, and he interviews the best minds of our time. And every time he releases a new podcast, and I think I've listened to all of his podcasts at this moment, I just, as I see a new podcast, I just really hope it's going to be a woman, because there isn't. Yeah. Like he's like 140 something at this point, and maybe a tenth of them are women. You know, I want to hear a woman talk about quantum physics, you know, like I want to hear a woman talk about these things. Like I want to hear a female perspective, right?
Yeah.
It just, and I just feel robotics, you know, there are, but there aren't enough. It's like a fraction, and they are not at the highest level of being celebrated. And you know what, if I see a woman get that to that point, for me, that battle is half won. And if that woman is not a Black woman, then we are on the right track to get there. I'm prioritizing getting more women into business and technology. I want to ask your view on positive discrimination, because this is an issue that comes into conversations quite a lot these days. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I see the value. I can see what people are trying to do. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think that, just like you said earlier, from the viewpoint of the person who is getting an opportunity because of the color of their skin or because they tick that box, it can have a negative impact on your self-esteem. Everybody thinks that, and is that maybe true? On the other hand, everybody else is thinking that without necessarily saying it. And you know, I have had ex-partners and friends that have been in decision-making areas in media and other corporations, and I have literally heard them say that, you know, like it's true. People do say that they're only there because of the color of their skin. That comes down to positive discrimination. So what's your view on that?
So here's the thing, and this is a really interesting topic, because it can take so many different facets. One of the ways of thinking about it is, generally when people discriminate or it comes across as being biased, it's because it's a lack of understanding and it's out of somebody's own value system and their own comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So if it's, you're thinking differently to how you're used to or your upbringing is, it's different, it's alien, it's foreign, I don't like it. It's fear. I'm going to stay away. And that's generally what sort of builds up emotionally to coming across as discrimination or prejudice in some way or form. So what companies are trying to do, they build affinity groups to try and say, okay, let's create sort of a women's network or some sort of a network for people from different communities or whatnot. That in itself, the idea is great because it lets people celebrate their cultures and communities, and they can do that. But what doesn't work is if you alienate others that are not technically part of that, because the whole point of an affinity group is for you to feel that sense of belonging, but also to share the love, share the education so others can learn. One of my clients happens to be in the film industry in Los Angeles and came to me and said, look, we had a women's network at our company, thought we did really well, but it completely backfired. We don't have it anymore. It's gone. We have no networks anymore. I was like, wow, okay. I would love to have been called before this was set up, but okay, let me try and fix this issue. What happened was they set up a women's network. The women were going and just having like spa days out and sort of luxury kind of wine tours and sort of cuisines and things like that. And there were men in the firm thinking, you know, I would love to be a part of that or be a part of what's going on, but they weren't. And they were like, well, that's discrimination too. Why are they able to do these things? Imagine if they wanted to set up a men's network. That would have just, that's a lawsuit right there. So they were like, why is that allowed? And why can't we go? And why do we get bad mouthed if we want to go on a golfing weekend? Because what's the difference in a way? And it was a very good point because it was the perception. One thing it did do was get them to understand the perception of why women have for years, for centuries thought, okay, what is wrong with just having a boys' network there, for example, because it's now bringing that to light. What should happen with these networks is you can create these subgroups. For example, it could be a Southeast Asian group or something, but then once a year, whether it's a Lunar New Year or another event coming up, celebrate it with everybody. Figure out ways mm-hmm. that your teams or your companies can celebrate and learn about your holiday. Similar if it's an Afro-Caribbean group that's set up, invite people in to understand about this. Understand, get them into your meeting. So yes, you can organize the agenda, the subject to be discussed, the debates, the speakers you're going to have, but to be fully inclusive, you need to invite everybody to the picture. Same, exactly. I say, I speak on a lot of women's panels. One of my first questions is, who is the audience? I want there to be men and women in the audience. I want the decision makers to be in the room. And quite often, the ones who practice what I'm saying are not the decision makers, and they're usually just women. So I'm like, I want them to be in the room because for change to happen, for people's minds to be changed, for narratives to be changed in their course, you need to get everybody in. It's exactly the same with these affinity groups where positive discrimination is just discrimination. So what you want to do is actually have them in a better light. Think, what is the purpose of what we are doing? And then go from there and then extend it. It's not just the workplace. And I think I discussed this partly in panel discussion as well. It extends beyond that. You know, what are conversations you're having at home? What are you having with your families, with your partners, significant others, on the telephone with folks in different countries and continents? How is that perception? Because that is directly linked to your value system, and that is enacted in the workforce. You want to make change happen? Not only do you change the way you're at work, but what you do at home as well. It's cyclical. It's wholeful. You have to do everything for change to happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is like, if we keep going back to the fact that really it has to be a change of heart, mm-hmm. right? Rather than just a change of mask, essentially.
That's
what it comes down to. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, one is about algorithms. So how do our biases spill into the algorithms that we are developing? Because one of my biggest concerns is that we don't have enough women writing these algorithms.
So I think when people set these algorithms, it does come out of a good place, but does it come out of a thorough place and thorough research and understanding? To your point, I'm not sure. I'll give you another example. So there was research done, I don't remember who did it now, but there was research showing that if you look at the average temperature in the workplace, it's set at a certain amount, which is optimum for men working, because biologically they work at a couple of degrees lower for their comfort levels than women. So automatically women are having to bring shawls, they're not in their comfort zone, they just feel uncomfortable, or they're the ones having to create a fuss about saying, you know what, can you turn my air vent 2 degrees warmer, something like that. That in itself, probably programmed by a man. I thought about, okay, what does an average employee want to do? Similarly with medicine and drugs. When dosages are made, typically they're made for men. So medicine in itself is warped as well. You know, they are not necessarily taking into account, you know, the physiology and the different biological needs of a woman, as an example. So I think historically, it's not just in the workplace. Unfortunately, we are seeing the result right now, but it's everywhere that this is happening. So then when you come to the workplace and you think about, okay, let's try to put some of these sort of hiring algorithms in to remove and to strip out names, birth dates, or, you know, where people are from, things like that. But then you're looking at the experiences. Women and men sometimes word things a bit differently. You know, women by, we just tend to, we are perfectionists by nature. And we also tend to explain a little bit more. Men can be a bit more minimalistic, not always, but just in general, a bit more minimalistic and sort of kind of a little bit more appealing, you know, sometimes straight to the point. So when you are sometimes stripping things out without any context, the woman's one can often seem like she's trying to decrease her font size so much that it's trying to squash onto this typical one-page resume. And I think things like that in itself is biased. The other thing is when people think about who to hire in the workforce, you know, workplace culture in itself, in one definition, is biased as well. Because what that means is you're trying to get people that, you know, oh, they're going to fit in. Naturally, they fit straight into our culture. Well, what do you mean by our culture? You know, it's our way of thinking. So when somebody challenges that, oh, they don't fit in. Yeah, I don't think they belong here. Rather than, oh, that's really interesting perspective. Or let's try their way of thinking that's doing that. So culture in itself is being challenged by diverse mindsets without realizing it. So this in itself is all kind of part of it. So where the algorithms are trying to help to strip that a little bit, in a way it's not, because the algorithms are the first part of the interviewing process. The minute you get on a Zoom call or an in-person interview, you can see the gender and person who they is. You can, if you can't see them, you hear their voice. And on average, it takes 6 seconds for any of us to form sort of some sort of an opinion about the other person through our own biases and our own sort of experiences. So in a way, yes, the algorithms can help a little bit, but how long-term is that and what can be done about it? So I think it's a whole sort of a chain of, you know, ultimately people like, you know, why does somebody think that somebody answers a question well versus somebody else? Everyone has pretty much good credentials on the resume. It's the way they communicate. But if you don't communicate well, doesn't mean you're going to be bad at the job. You might be more introverted. So automatically there's a huge bias against introverts out there who maybe find it a little bit harder to express themselves, but they might be great at that job if you gave it to them. In the tech field in particular, do you need to be a great communicator? Depends what you're doing. Probably not always, but that's the thing. Are you looking in between the lines? People spend too long looking for excuses to exclude resumes than reasons to include them. And I think it's this mindset that needs to be changed as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting. The way I see it, I think we can use algorithms to our benefit because as humans, we have biases that we know, you know, like you can, there's a chapter in my book on the future of work, which is about critical thinking. So, so when you look at, you know, critical thinking can be defined in terms of, you know, how to avoid certain biases. So if we know that we naturally have those biases, we can build algorithms that will help us, nudge us to say, you know, you could be having this bias here. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, a data gap. You know, I'm very passionate about this concept of data gap because, for example, when you were talking about the room temperature, the reason why it's built for the default is that the default is male. So for centuries and for millennia, we have had a gap in our understanding, in our data. I say the flow of data to women and about women. So there's a real gap in between. With that in mind, you know, how can we use these new conversations around diversity in a positive way to close that data gap?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, things were done because that was the default setting. But if you look at even who makes up the workplace now, you know, you come out of university, in university, you actually have slightly more percentage of female than male graduates at the moment anyway. It's like 51% women versus like 49% men currently. So in that sense, then these folks then go into their first jobs. So then it's 50-50 again. And then later on things happen as you kind of go up the ranks, as life changes happen, the women whittle off and the men keep going. Up until that point though, it is 50-50 in certain areas, not everywhere. But in those, even those 50-50 areas, and I'm talking about finance and banking as an example, it's still very much catered for the men only in the workplace. And almost like the women are changing their viewpoint to almost become like that in a way, to kind of fit in and feel that sense of belonging rather than being asked, okay, what can we do to kind of make things a bit easier? So I think, you know, as we go forward and, you know, certainly in STEM, certainly in technology, there's a big, big push to kind of get more women on the field. Part of that is, okay, what are the interests? Rather than saying, okay, women historically don't like to program, I go back, I mean, I have two small children, so I look at the playground, for example, and it starts right there. Do they understand the rules of the playground? I'll give you an example. So when a group of 5-year-olds running around the playground, and now they're all into sort of trading cards, Pokemon cards or whatever cards they are, like top trumps and whatnot, things like that. And generally it's boys and girls that both do it. Having said that, the girls are usually the ones that borrow the cards or get traded back from the guys that just want to, the boys that want to let them in. Because technically, traditionally, and this is not my way, the parents won't necessarily buy a set of those cards for their daughters. It's just not done. So the rules of trading, the rules of critical thinking and programming and thinking ahead of building algorithms starts, binary coding starts in the playground. Yes or no? Shall I give them the card? Shall I not? That is binary thinking. That is the very essence and root of when programming first started, is not being enabled to kids from the ages of 4 and 5 years old onwards. So there is a big, big root problem right there. So when we talk about algorithms and biases, it needs to start a lot earlier. So in terms of how to solve this, open up the doors earlier on, make these opportunities available. You know, it's not just the teaching, it's parents. Go to the playground, an actual playground after school or whatever. And, you know, I've done this myself. And I was like, oh, and then I caught myself and I changed my narrative where, you know, my son was just climbing the monkey bars and he fell and I just ignored him. My daughter fell and, you know, she's 2 years younger and she fell and I immediately got up to go pick her up. And I was like, oh, why did I react that way with my daughter but not my son? You know, and then I stopped and I was like, you know what? She'll figure it out. If it hurts her, she'll do it a different way. If she needs help, she'll ask for it. So that's how I was brought up. I was very much rough and tumbling, but I even caught myself doing that. Let alone others that are really sort of certain biases. So you see what I mean? It's our own human nature that wants to monocoddle, that wants to overly protect one gender versus the other. And that comes across later on, you know? And then now when more women are speaking up and the whole feminist movement is coming to light, that in itself could cause different sort of prejudices rather than the traditional definition of feminism, which is to try and bring women on the same standing to kind of say, hey, we're here, everybody. It's now more coming across as women are here, men are bad, you know, and it's coming up with them and us in a different way.
Yeah, that's not positive.
So what you're doing is instead of bringing men on your platform to say, yes, we're here, you're actually just closing off half the population. And you need, and that's not how you do it. And it's the same with diversity and inclusion. It's very them and us. You know how many friends I've got and how many folks and how many trainings I'm doing on diversity and inclusion where I'm actually speaking to managers currently and they're like, I understand about white privilege and stuff, but people are just basically saying white is bad. And I take that, you know, personally, that's hurtful. I've never done anything in my life, but by virtue of being born this color, I'm being discriminated against. Yes. And from the other side, they're like, well, so you deserve it. This has been happening to us for centuries. I said, fine, but there are different ways of acknowledging that, you know, it's understanding this, but what can we do about it? By alienating one person, you know, part of the population doesn't help solve it. So in terms of your, you know, really how do you answer your question, there isn't a simple way, but it's a thought process. It needs to start earlier. It's education, I would say.
Education. Yeah, it all comes down to education. Yes, definitely. That's why with our panel, I've been reaching out to men as well and saying, I want to have more men on,
The panel.
And I want, you know, because most of the time when we send the emails to people, say like, would you like to be on this panel? 8 out of 10 men respond saying, I'm not a woman. And I'm like, please read it. I've said we want men too. You know, on the one hand, I was like initially thinking, is it a good idea to have a separate network, to have a network like this? And I think it is a good idea because we need to have a place that will be a safe place where women can trade, can, you know, raise investment. But it has a time limit. Like I can see, like, this is something that would be need for maybe a decade or two. This is a step. It's the step to, it's kind of like, if you think about a, what do you call this thing where children, one person sits here and one person sits here?
Oh, the seesaw. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah.
That goes up and down.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a system. So it's like for a very long time, it's been like very heavy on one side with men, yeah. right? And we now need to balance it, you know, and for that to happen, we do need these networks. But we need to remember that this is a temporary measure. You know, it's like, it's a matter of maybe one or two generations until we bring more balance to the situation. Yeah. And for me, balance is not like, I'm not saying men should be like women or women should be like men. No, no, no. I want to be able to hear a diverse perspective, you know, in the technology space, in the business yeah. space, because that's where, you know, the future of humanity is being decided. You know, we are now talking about merging with our technologies. Like I use this ring, this watch, all of these are designed by men, right? Like the Apple Watch, for example, when they made the announcement for it, and it was like such an amazing thing. One of the most important things, like half of the planet are women. There was no mention of how it could help with women's cycle. So this is a very, very good example of how this technology is not built in a way that takes into account the needs of half of the planet, right? So I really hope that people take something positive away from this conversation and that we just change the narrative around these topics. You mentioned about your daughter and, you know, how it starts from a very early age. And you also mentioned about the fact that we have more women increasingly in these areas, but a lot of times they go into technology and then they go and have children and then they don't come back, right? So there's also that issue. What's your takeaway in terms of how we can address that? Because I feel like we are losing a lot of female talent when they go to have children. What was it like for yourself?
I mean, my own experience was that, and the reason I decided to start my company, Uma, was to empower anyone who had that career, perceived career gap in the first place. I realized that when I became a full-time parent, that I was actually working harder than I'd ever done in any of my actual workplace roles anyway. So when people said, oh, you're not working right now. So, oh, actually I am working, but actually 10 times as hard as I was, you know? So I'm always trying to clarify that to change people's mindsets. So I think part of it is just the system. So the workplace, yes, they're trying to make things a bit better for mothers that are coming back to certain older careers. What they need to do is not just say it's a mother thing or a female thing, it's a family thing though, because obviously when people go into this decision, in most cases they're in a partnership, they're married, not always, but it's a partnership. So you have to afford the same benefits and consideration to both and make it okay to talk about it. So many times, you know, being in New York City, it's just not really done so much. Paternity leave, people take it in on the sly and quiet a lot of the time. You know, for example, when, you know, men are in the workplace, they might have been up all night as well, helping change diapers and doing midnight feeds and just not being able to sleep because there's a crying baby in the house. And they're exhausted going in the next day as well. So it does take a significant toll on new fathers as well, except they don't have that outlet. And people are also forgetting that side of it. And then, you know, there's so much breakdown of communication because of it. So I think in order to change that narrative, it's not just being trying to find solutions to help working mothers, working fathers too, working parents. Parent is a joint word. It doesn't discriminate with the mother or father. It's a joint word. So treat it like that. And the same with the school system too. Everyone has to have their part in this. You know, yes, there's quarantine and COVID going on right now, and schools have limited openings, certainly in New York at the moment, but schools have literally shut down early drop-off and late pickup. So when you are a parent that is, you know, having some sort of professional work experience, either from home or somewhere back in the office now, what are you going to do when half your day is just stopping there? So it's a big, big kind of consideration as well, that people not just think in order to make change happen, think about where are the holes right now? What are the needs? Where are the holes? Rather than let's just stick a bandage on it because it looks good and it will give us publicity. Because that's what's happening. What should happen is you look at the root cause of what's causing the leak in the first place. And that way the conversation gets started and it's going to go a lot further.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Rita. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much, Somi.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and YouTube, or connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram.